Professor Wallace and Professor Trobley is coming up, and we'll open it up. What we're going to do is take questions for and answers for about give or take an hour, and then they have a final presentation on tax reform, what Georgia's done, to give us some idea of what, you know, an actual state has been looking at in the way of tax modernization. So we'll start out. Senator Harms and then Senator Solon.
David, thank you, everybody, for coming. And Sally, we appreciate you coming here for the hearing. I have a couple of questions I'd like to ask, David, for you. First of all, in year 2005, Ohio eliminated the corporate income tax. What impact did that have regarding their economy? And what have I kind of lost track of that. What actually took place in Ohio?
I don't know of any study that I've done looking at what the economic effect was.
Okay.
In that swamp. They went from basic corporate income tax, taxing businesses on the basis of gross receipts, really radically different kind of tax. But I don't think there was a big change in revenue.
Okay, so it pretty much held its own revenue
as far as I know.
When they imposed it, they were intending it to be revenue neutral, so.
Okay. Okay, and then in regard to incentives, we give a lot of money in incentives to business for what it comes to this great state or who are here to expand for labor. The question I have is how do we measure, what benchmarks can we use as a legislative body to determine whether this really works or doesn't work and whether these companies would have done it anyway without our help and would have come here without that incentive. That's just a big issue as far as I see it. And like you said, we give a phenomenal amount of dollars away. And I'm just not sure whether or not we're getting the bang for the buck. I just would like to hear your thoughts about that.
It's a really difficult question. Pew had a report surveyed what states did in terms of evaluating their tax credit programs, incentive programs. And most states do a really lousy job. They can't even track the number of jobs for which they give credits, or the amount of investment for which they give credits. At least they don't report that. I read the audit report that was done for the Nebraska tax credit incentives, and they kept saying, well, we don't have any information. You know, the information. It's hard to do an evaluation without information. If you think about film tax credits, which you don't have one, thankfully, that industry is such that you can be pretty assured that any business that you get in the film industry is only there because of the credits. They are so mobile, they're going where it's cheapest, and basically that's where the credits are highest. So states are competing dramatically. So you can think of any increase in movie production, film production, videos production, as associated with that tax credit. Now, several states, New Mexico, Massachusetts, have done a fairly detailed study and looked at how much did they spend on the credits, and then how many jobs were created, kind of revenues were generated, tax revenues, both directly on the production, as well as spillover effects because of increased spending because of, you know, more business in the state. And I think they came to similar conclusions, but the Massachusetts study said that for every dollar that they paid out in credits, they got 17 cents in tax revenue. So it was costing them a whole lot of money. I mean, that's one piece of it. The other is how many jobs were created that wouldn't have been created otherwise, how much investment was created. And trying to measure that is really, really hard.
Is there any standards that we could turn to or authorities that would say, here's what you ought to incorporate in this type of program?
Not that I'm aware of.
But you know what, Dave mentioned the Pew Center study, and Pew has really taken a lead in looking at a couple aspects of methodology on measuring tax incentives, but also other best practices. So the state of Washington and the state of Arizona are doing a fairly good job relative to what a place like Georgia is doing in order to track the incentives. So I think that you know, in the coming year or two, we're going to start seeing more data to begin to answer the questions that you have and the points that, that Dave mentions.
Thank you very much.
Senator Sullivan and Senator Mello.
Thank you, Senator. And thank you both for coming here. My question is for Dr. Wallace. One of the charges of this committee is to look at modernizing our tax code. And in your closing comments, you talked about looking at ways for the income tax to capture certain elements of our economy, but that in this technology-driven economy of today, it's hard to find things to capture. I wonder if you could elaborate on that and maybe give some suggestions.
Yeah, and like a point that Dave made, I think John made this morning, it's very hard to look at any tax in the absence of looking at all of the taxes and also the expenditures. And it's real important that that is all seen as a mix. But vis-a-vis the income tax itself, I think one of the potentials for modernization of an income tax is to get a better idea in Nebraska how large a shift you're seeing, if you are, between capital and labor as inputs into the production process. And if it's similar to what we see in a lot of states, it will be more difficult for you to hold on to that capital base relative to the labor base. So one prescription that comes out of that is sort of the old standard of lower the rates some, broaden the base in general, so that you reduce the incentives, even at the margin, for a mobile aspect like capital to look around as to where it should plant itself. So the notion of lower rates and broader bases. It also brings up the issue of the importance of property taxes, which, you know, John mentioned this morning. There's large components of that are not so mobile. And if you took, you know, if you took a textbook case and took it to its natural end, you'd say, you know, let's just use the property tax and nothing else. Property tax on land, nothing else. But no modern system can put all of their eggs in that one basket either.
Thank you, Chairman Hadley. I guess this is a question for probably both of you, and no doubt you've been following what other states have done in the country, particularly in North Carolina and Kansas, in regards to some of the very dramatic changes they've made in their income tax system. Can you share any, maybe your feedback, your thoughts and opinions on kind of how they went about making some pretty big changes in their income tax system, and if you think that was sound fiscal policy for the way that they went about doing it?
I'm not sure I can talk about the process. I was invited to North Carolina to talk before they started the process, to talk somewhere about Georgia, but beyond that, I'm not sure. And so the only thing I know is what I read in my books. I don't think it's a good source. So I really can't discuss that.
Yeah, I guess that I've focused a little bit more on Kansas than some of the other states, and the notion of separating and differentiating the treatment of particular types of entities, like pass-through entities, doesn't seem to be the right way to do it from my perspective. If we talk about trying to level the playing field, more typically you would be doing that across the board and not sort of cherry-picking those winners that way.
Have you seen any data research that's come across your desks at all that have shown that, at least in Kansas, with the model that they've kind of embarked on, that it's increased their competitiveness, so to speak, that they've seen an increase in job creation, lowering of unemployment, a growth of firms being created in the state of Kansas at all through their tax decisions over the last couple of years?
It's probably too soon to see. Data isn't that current.
I haven't seen anything that hasn't come out of the governor's office there. So,
generally, on the corporate income tax, there seems to be some consensus that the federal corporate income tax is on the high side internationally. And there's been talk that the House would like to see a reduction. Clinton's made comments he'd like to see a reduction. Obama's made comments that reduction in exchange for some trade-off would be good. To the extent the federal government makes a reduction from in the 30% to say in the 20% on the federal corporate income tax, it would seem to me that there would then be an incentive for the reasonable bet we're going to see a decent reduction in federal corporate taxes, so how we can posture ourselves here in order to be one of the states that the repatriation occurs in, and how do we encourage the repatriated money to somehow invest here.
There's the notion of reducing federal corporate tax from 35 to 20%. And if they broaden the base to generate similar kind of revenues that we're generating now, except that Nebraska continues to tie to the federal, it's going to broaden your tax base as well. So you're getting more revenue from that. Lowering the rate to 20% may generate some reparation profits from abroad, but probably not a lot. It's not to their advantage to come over here, bring the money in, and pay 20% tax. So I wouldn't expect to see huge increases. To accept that they do that, you're probably right, that they would try to put those in the states where the tax rates are very low or non-existent. So neighboring states would benefit. Beyond lowering your rates, limiting your tax, I don't see why they would pick to bring money into Nebraska unless they're headquartered here. That's how we're asked to resign.
Thank you. Sally, this is a question for you.
Before this, and it's not clear that those are earnings from abroad that they would be taxable here. I'm sorry.
Okay, we're ready?
Yeah, sorry.
All right. I don't want to cut you off.
Slower.
That's okay. You know, as I look at the tax structures across the nation, the cornerstone of the tax structure in this great nation is income tax. And I think it's true here too, because when you look at the amount of tax that we raise, the greatest amount we raise is through property tax. And you get out of the property tax side, come on the state side, it's income tax, then sales tax, and the rest of them just kind of fall in line, okay? Those states that do not have the state income tax, now there's like 5 or 6 or maybe 7, I don't know. How do they generate that revenue? I mean, and how does the rest of their tax structure relate to us if we put them on a chart? For example, they're making their money through, sales tax. I mean, I'm just curious about how we match up with that.
It's almost that the states that are often held up in that comparison, if we look across, Texas gets their biggest revenue from sales tax, and it's 22%, I think, of their revenue comes from sales tax. They certainly get money from severance taxes with oil and natural gas. It pales in comparison to that. Alaska, similar. Nevada, there's the taxes on gaming. So it's almost as if each state that's in that situation is a very specific case, and we can't talk about those 8 states as having a unifying theme because they take advantage of very specific characteristics that are going on in the states. And the other thing, I'm going to sound like a broken record in a minute, but I think we as economists in the tax policy world do a real disservice oftentimes when we're talking about taxes to not remind ourselves that the expenditures are on the other side. And in most of these conversations that we participate in, we don't even push that envelope. What's on the expenditure side that goes along with it?
There are 9 states without a personal income tax. And they're all fairly unique, other than Washington. Washington has a very sizable gross receipts tax in lieu of corporate tax, and a sizable sales tax. Almost all of the 9 states generate revenue, primarily replacement revenue, through the sales tax. They also do higher property taxes, higher transfer fees. Most of them, other than three tax businesses in ways other than a corporate tax. They also shove part of their fiscal responsibility on the local governments. So Texas, for example, the state share of taxes, state and local taxes, is much smaller than it is for the nation, much smaller than it is for Kentucky, for Nebraska. I knew I'd tell you. states are doing that, but all of them are doing much more sales tax than other states.
Thank you.
Talking about local taxes, you know, in Nebraska, we have cities that can have a local option sales tax and a property tax. We have counties that basically property tax is their only source of revenue. School districts either have state aid or property taxes. Is there a move across the nation to expand the income tax to different taxing units within states? Or is there more of a move to have city income taxes, county income taxes?
I think that there was a trend to go to some local option income taxes or payroll taxes. There are many large cities that have payroll taxes, like 1% on wages. But the amount of revenue that's been generated has been very, very flat. That has not expanded. What has expanded are more and more local option sales taxes. Georgia is. It's home for local option sales taxes. Every county has 3%, and the city of Atlanta has 4% on local option. All is an attempt to reduce the property taxes. So in Georgia, city and local sales taxes are quite high.
But this trend with the local income taxes, I think the last movement was probably in the 80s when we saw adoptions of it. And not since then. And Ohio's the master of local income taxes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for sharing your expertise with us today. Can you speak about how changes to the income tax, I guess both corporate or individual, affect different sectors of the economy, and are there sectors that are more responsive and more would make changes, whether it's more likely to move? Is there evidence that points to that? There are sectors that are.
It's more
emphasized. I don't know of studies that have looked at responsiveness of various industrial sectors. We know that film production is very mobile.
Sure.
I can't think of others that, off the top of my head, as to what industries would be more responsive.
Yeah.
But certainly there would be.
Earlier you said that labor was less likely to move than capital, so those industries then that are more capital intensive would be.
That would be the assumption. And
okay.
We haven't done a very good job of looking at that.
Yeah. Okay. And then secondly, the studies that you pointed to on just economic impacts of changes to income tax rates, did those take into account the loss, a net loss to the state's economy because of the federal deductibility of state taxes? So if we make a $300 million income tax cut, we're going to be sending a check to Washington around probably about 20-25% of that. They certainly need it for their budget deficits, but it would be a net loss to our economy here. I don't know if any of those studies looked at that.
On the list that I had, the first study did look at the federal deductibility, so they had that component to it. Thank you. The second study, to be honest with you, I'm not sure that they did include that. And there have been, interestingly, a number of studies that have, instead of just looking at the state income tax, they look at the federal and state income tax rate together and look at the impact of that combined rate, which is kind of cheating, looking at the state of
Sure.
So,
sure. Yeah. Thank you.
Governor Hanson, thank you. One of the two of you mentioned earlier about the state of Hawaii and 11 tax credits, is that correct? Mr. Wallace, you said, what is that like? What would it be the emphasis to have 11? We have two.
They have, and not having studied Hawaii, their lowest rate begins at $2,400 worth of taxable income, so relatively low rate, and the top rate begins at $200,000, and that's 11% rate there. And they report 12 brackets that are associated with that. I've never studied it. Most states that do that would say that they're very interested in increase or having some component of progressivity in their system and find the income tax the place to do it. I don't know if you know anything specific about that.
In fact, they just want people to call there.
Or they come over there and they can't leave, so they can get them, right?
Well, I think Hawaii, if I remember right, it also has one school district.
Yes.
Forward now from the Syracuse, what recommendations did you make then that you would look back and say, well, right now I changed my opinion? I mean, you've seen the evolution since then. Are some lessons that we could look at Syracuse and that you might change your mind on?
Way back then, I also focused on the individual income tax. I think that there was more specificity to the recommendations for the corporate and some, and school financing was a big issue back then as well. But on the individual income tax, the advice wasn't that much different. There was a call for broadening the base and flattening the rate some. The movement to go to federal AGI was done in part because of the changes with the big federal tax reform, and I think that was probably a smart thing to do then. But as a result of that coupling, more holes have come into the system, so it might be backtracking back to those recommendations and not quite repeating them, but coming close to it.
So that, at this point, you would advocate us going back to take a look at some of those recommendations that we did not necessarily enact and see if there's something there that we should change in. Are you going to cover in the Georgia study the whole idea of going away from the income tax to increasing the property tax? Did I understand that right? Is that what's being done in Georgia, or is it the opposite of that?
That was an earlier proposal by the then Speaker of the House.
So not going anywhere.
Didn't go anywhere. He's out of office.
When you mentioned broadening the base, I certainly understand the broadening the base with it. Professor Meisel was here about services and that type of thing. But when we talk about broadening the base and income tax, how do we go about, you know, if we want to lower the rate, and you talk about broadening the base so it literally becomes revenue neutral, what do you mean by broadening the base in income tax?
Well, one basic distinction is consistent treatment between capital and labor income. I believe Nebraska has some preferential rate for certain types of capital income, and I might be misunderstanding the tax code. Another is to look at the credits and exemptions that are in the system, and I'm speaking completely out of school now because I haven't studied them, but the angel investment credit is that, you know, broadening the base would get rid of that credit from the income tax perspective. The exemption for the capital income, the pass-through through ESOPs that you recently passed, you know, what are the benefits and costs of doing that, changing that clock back would broaden the base. So there are exemptions and credits in an income tax system that are maybe not as large as in the sales tax system, but they're there as well.
Along with that, we certainly, on the Revenue Committee, get a lot of bills every year, and a lot of discussion on exempting all retirement income, military retirement income, Social Security retirement, or some basis in there. But if we're talking about broadening the base, this is the exact opposite of it, isn't it? If we start exempting more, or exempting those kinds of income.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that I highlighted that in my short presentation, because that's been a real push across the country, is to look at the income accruing to retirees and to elderly, as well as the military. But states are finding that exemptions is quite large, and therefore it becomes part of the policy debate in terms of the equity. You know, have these folks put enough into the system? Do they deserve the benefit of no more tax on it? Or
it's a difficult.
It gets expensive.
Senator Hirschman, Senator Shoemaker,
do you have an idea of aggregate what the exemptions, these tax incentive, kind of all aggregate out to be in Nebraska?
In Nebraska, you know, I didn't bring it with, but you guys have a fairly good tax expenditure report, and provided in there. I didn't bring it with me. But.
Did it seem to me of a material size in light of the overall amount collected from income tax?
It's smaller as I remember the things that I was looking at vis-a-vis Georgia, for instance. But I did not study it in much. I didn't give it much time to study.
And help me put the two things together. I thought, so the overall, there's a recommendation of limiting exemptions, broad but flat when it comes to the income tax. But on one hand, on the other hand, I thought there wasn't adequate enough either agreement or studies or literature that would definitively instructively tell us or even guide us that everything was all over the board at best, whether tax incentives lead to economic gain or loss for in general, statewide or any state for that matter, nor is there a known method or tool or procedure that we could implement best practice way so that we could, even after the fact, assess 5, 10 years, 15 years later, did this particular incentive that was put in place in, say, 2002, did that achieve a net gain or a net loss controlling for other factors? So.
Yeah, no, your point's well taken, and it's probably the place that I feel most uncomfortable because you're exactly right. What I said was we don't have good evidence. It's all over the board. It's back and forth. Yet we continue to prescribe that we think that, in theory, lowering the rates or having less differential between rates, whether it's between individuals, high income, low income, between your neighboring states, between different types of companies, why is that advice still given? And I think part of it is the point that Dave made. At the margin, there is an effect. What we're not sure of is how large it is and what the net effect is that in terms of the cost, the change in revenue versus doing that. So, theoretically, presumably, if two individuals had a choice between a 6% rate and a 4% rate and everything else was constant, then it would make a difference. We have to do a real good job of knowing what all the other pieces are and whether they are similar or not.
Would it be fair to say that you think that in terms of economic development businesses, in terms of creating jobs and locating the state, are in the state for significantly different reasons other than tax incentives?
In general, I would say yes.
And I would agree. The notion of effective taxes, we're talking about 2 percentage points differences in income taxes or corporate rates, for example. That's hard sometimes to even see how important that is. But if you were to jack your rate up to 20%, I believe it, corporations would see that, and you could probably say goodbye to much of your business. So it's not that taxes don't matter. It's just that the differences that you observe are not huge, and they don't matter a whole lot in the scheme of things. But at the margin,